Proceed with the second case of the morning, United States v. Trey Roberson et al. Mr. Ruth.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Robert Ruth, and I represent the defendant appellant Stephen Black in this case. There are two glaring problems with the district court's ruling in this case that make it clearly erroneous. First of all, there is no evidence in the record as to the nature of the relationship between these three gentlemen, in this case, the three co-defendants, other than the fact that Mr. Black made the deliveries. He had phone contact with the informant, and he made the deliveries.
I thought he was staying at the apartment.
That's evidence as to their relationship, the fact that they know each other. Yeah, certainly.
Living together.
Well, it's not clear that they were living together. And can I say that's clearly erroneous? I probably can't. But if you recall, it was a three-bedroom apartment. Two of the bedrooms were furnished. And one of the bedroom that's attributed to Mr. Black is completely unfurnished. There's no clothing. There's not a toothbrush. There's nothing.
Air mattress.
So to say that Mr. Black lived there, I think that's a stretch on this record. But, you know.
Overnight guest for the period of time that the place was under surveillance, apparently?
Well, the surveillance didn't have any information that he lived there or that he was an overnight guest.
Okay.
All the surveillance found out was that he left the area of that apartment and he drove a vehicle attributed to that apartment to the deliveries. But I'll concede that an air mattress in a room, and one of the co-defendants said, that's Steve's room. That's enough to establish that at some point he was an overnight guest there. At least I can't say it's clearly erroneous to say that. But that's it then. That's it. So that he is there. Now remember also when there was some evidence, it was in the pre-sentence report, when the manager of the apartment, Mr. Black, approached the manager of the apartment and said, I'm expecting a package here, and gave his name and said, So now, again, that puts Steve Black in that apartment, and it puts Steve Black in that apartment on a day other than the day of his arrest. But it strongly suggests he doesn't live there, because if he lived there, he wouldn't have to give the heads up about the package coming. But I will concede overnight guest that's not clearly erroneous. But where does that lead us? None of the cocaine, none of the paraphernalia, nothing was in plain view. A good chunk of it was locked up in a safe, and some was hidden in the oven, and the rest was hidden in a bedroom.
I thought there was a lot of cash and some drugs in the common area of the apartment.
There were no drugs in plain view. There were drugs hidden in the oven, not in plain view. So, there were drugs in a common area outside of the safe, but not in plain view.
Where was the cash?
Well, I think the cash was in a bedroom, in a drawer, in the safe, and in the oven. It wasn't just laying around. There was nothing that said drug dealers just laying around, other than I suppose you could say there was a safe. But that doesn't tell us what the quantity was. So that's what we forget about the district judge's ruling, and let's just look at the evidence here. There's nothing in this record to say that these three fellows are partners. Now, then let's go to the district judge's ruling. He said, and he said it, you know, beyond a reasonable doubt, he said that, well, there's this three-man partnership. And he had three reasons why he thought he could call it a three-man partnership. First of all, he said, they all went to the same high school. Well, that was the first time I'd ever heard that, because there's nothing in that in our pre-sentence report. I'm told by the government that apparently that's in Mr. Roberson's pre-sentence report, but I don't know that. I don't have access to that. I wasn't given notice of that. I didn't have an opportunity to object to that. I found out for the first time at the sentencing hearing that somehow the fact that these fellows, who are about, my client is about 28 years old, graduated from high school, I think, in 1997, that he went to high school with this guy almost 10 years ago, and that somehow makes a difference. So one, it doesn't make any difference at all. But more importantly, I didn't have notice. It's not in our pre-sentence. It's not a fact in this record. and therefore it's not a fact that this court or the district court can rely upon. The other factor that the judge looked at, he said, was, well, they were all three charged with criminal damage to property in 1999. Well, first of all, that's wrong. At least according to my pre-sentence report, I don't know about the others, but my pre-sentence report says that Montclair Henderson L. and Steve Black were charged with criminal damage to property, not Roberson. So he's wrong when he says all three of them. But more importantly, there's nothing to suggest that a 1999 criminal damage to property conviction has anything to do with drugs. We don't know anything about it, other than that apparently it was a baseball bat used to damage some property. But there's nothing to suggest it had to do with drugs. There's nothing to suggest that these fellows had anything to do with each other on a continuing basis since that point in time. Just nothing. Nothing at all. So to point to this criminal damage to property and say that proves a three-man partnership is to pull something out of the thin air. And then finally, perhaps the most perplexing reason that the judge gave is he said, well, Henderson L. and Roberson were arrested on May 7th. Well, I don't know what that means, because he didn't give that's not in my pre-sentence report, one. Second of all, he's not even saying that my client was involved in that, so I fail to see how it could make any difference at all. And third, May 7th of what year? I have no idea. And in this record, the record in this case, there's no way to put a year to it. So it's just a sentence thrown in there that has nothing to do with the ruling. At least, no, it has nothing reasonable to do with the ruling in this particular case. And that's it. That's the judge's entire basis for saying this is a three-man partnership. So, well, what the government does is the government says, well, they can't point to anything specific, but they say, well, it's just the entire record as a whole. They try to slough off the district judge's erroneous. They concede that he made mistakes. But they say, well, it doesn't really matter that much, and then just say, look at the entire record. But what? There's nothing in the record to make this a three-man partnership. I will reserve the rest of my time in hopes that this government will say something that I can respond to on the question of this three-man partnership. Thank you.
Just a second. Are you going to argue for somebody, or what's the deal here?
The issue that I raised has already been adversely decided by this court.
Okay. All right, thanks. Go ahead.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Meredith Duchman, and I represent the United States. I wanted to address a question that Your Honor had earlier regarding some drugs found in the common area. In addition to the safe in the broiler section of the oven, which did contain 383.9 grams of crack cocaine, there were drugs in the kitchen drawer, and that was 61.3 grams. So I wanted to address that. The second thing that I want to do is reframe the issues a little bit here. Mr. Ruth wants to frame the issues as, what exactly was his role? Were they equal partners? I would suggest that's really not the issue. And the issue is whether or not the court erred in finding that the 1.7 kilos at the apartment were reasonably foreseeable to Black. Now, what Mr. Black wants you to do is establish a rule that the government has to prove the exact hierarchy of a drug organization as a prerequisite to finding the relevant conduct of any one of its members. That's just not the law. The government has to prove, by preponderance of the evidence, that this 1.7 kilos was reasonably foreseeable. Once a district court makes that finding, this court reviews it on clear error. As Mr. Ruth already conceded, in this case, the court made the finding not just by a preponderance, not even by clear and convincing evidence, but the court made the finding beyond a reasonable doubt. The evidence that the government introduced was very strong. Black sold crack cocaine in higher and higher amounts over a four-week period to an undercover officer. The last one, significantly high, 123.35 grams for $3,500. Each time he's seen leaving the apartment complex and going directly to the buy. For two of the three buys, he's driving one of the co-defendants' vehicles. For the last buy, Roberson, another co-defendant, and Black went together. Roberson did the counter-surveillance. When Black was arrested with Roberson on September 30th, 2004, right before the search warrant was executed, Black had two cell phones on him, one that he was using to communicate with the undercover officer, his customer, and one that he was using to communicate with Roberson during the counter-surveillance. The apartment manager said that in July of 2004, Black said he was staying in apartment 12, and that was approximately 1 month before the buy. Indeed, Mr. Ruth conceded that he was staying there, at least overnight, periodically. And then hours after the last buy, and I think this is a key point, they execute a search warrant. We're not talking about 2 weeks later after the last buy. We're not even talking about a day later. We're talking about hours later. They execute a search warrant at the apartment. Henderson L. was there, another co-defendant. He identifies whose room was whose, says Stephen Black has a room. We've got crack in Henderson L.'s room, crack in Roberson's room, crack in the kitchen drawer, crack in the safe in the broiler of the oven. We've got a scale. We've got a lot of cash. And I think one of the key things that the district court said was to redefine Mr. Black not as a delivery person, not as a courier, but as a salesperson. We are not talking about an individual who was taking orders from his co-defendant. A true courier, the true low man on the totem pole, is the individual who gets an order from the leader and is told, "You deliver to my customer over here." This undercover officer was Stephen Black's customer, not anybody else's customer. Drug organizations wouldn't work if they had nobody to sell to. That was Stephen Black's role. That is not a courier. The other notion, again, I mean, this notion of equal partners. Mr. Ruth takes the court to task on some facts, and I certainly admit that, you know, the court sort of mushed together a lot of different facts in the three PSRs. The fact that they went to high school together is not in Stephen Black's PSR. But the fact of the matter is that the court did not have to find that they were equal partners to find that this relevant conduct was foreseeable to Mr. Black. Whether he was a mastermind, whether he was a courier, or somewhere in between, the fact of the matter was he knew that stuff was in the apartment. And he knew it because he'd just gotten it. And he got a lot of it. He had to know it was there in large quantities because he just got $3,500 worth of it a couple hours before the search warrant. The government met its burden, and we'd ask that you find that the court's finding was not error. Nobody really talked about the crack to powder issue. I don't know if the court wants me to address that or not.
Well, I think it's more or less conceded.
Okay. Unless you have any other questions, I will ask you to affirm the convictions and the sentences of the defendants.
Okay. Mr. Ruth?
Just so that the court is clear, my counsel for the co-defendant has generously yielded his time to me because his issue has been dealt with in a case prior to our case. A couple of points I'd like to make. I can virtually concede any fact that the government can throw out in this case because these particular facts don't make a difference. And they say all of what the government says, leaving the scene or leaving the apartment complex area prior to the bust, drugs hidden in the apartment, in the kitchen drawer, in the broiler area of the stove, driving a vehicle associated with the apartment. All of that establishes a jointly undertaken activity. I concede that. But you need more than just a jointly undertaken activity. You need something, some fact or set of facts or set of reasonable inferences to take it to the next factor and say, not only is it a jointly undertaken activity, but based on the facts in this case, it's reasonably foreseeable to Mr. Black, not that there's more cocaine base, but that there's 1.7 kilos of cocaine base in the apartment. And that's what we don't have in this particular case.
What about the large and increasing amounts of the buys, the controlled buys?
Well,
isn't it a logical inference from that that there was this was a major source?
There's a logical inference that Black would know that these people have access to additional quantities, but not that he knows that they have this amount hidden in the apartment. So the amounts keep going up, and so any reasonable person would say, well, these people must have access to at least the quantities that I'm delivering, but not, well, there's no inference that they have access to quantities beyond that, or more importantly, that they have quantities beyond that hidden in the apartment. I see that my time is up. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. This case will be taken under advisement. Mr. Ruth, I understand you were court appointed. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, we appreciate your taking the assignment for your good work for your client.